The panel was misled, Mr. President, and that's really unfortunate that they were misled on two key points.
A fiery hearing over the bill to relax cruise ship discharge requirements. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, February 13th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an overflow crowd protests an Anchorage plan to limit union bargaining power.
This collective bargaining ordinance has been around for 44 years. I don't understand what the hurry is to change it in 2 weeks.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Confessed serial killer Israel Keyes was mistakenly issued a razor before he committed suicide, according to a report released today by the Alaska Department of Corrections. The report also says it appears that razor was not retrieved. Keyes' body was found in his jail cell on December 2nd, months before he was to have gone on trial for the 2012 slaying of Samantha Koenig. Though Keyes' death was classified a suicide, the exact cause is unknown, pending autopsy results, the report says. Before he died, Keyes told investigators he had killed Koenig and at least seven other people across the country. Keyes was in state custody in Anchorage because there are no federal prisons in Alaska. Bringing justice to all Alaskans. That was the major theme of State Supreme Court Chief Justice Dana Fabe's speech at the Capitol today. Fabe stressed the importance of preventative approaches, like an early resolution process to help settle divorce cases quickly, to improve outcomes for both the participants involved and taxpayers.
Disputes resolved early are disputes that no longer fill our caseloads.
Fabe said the Early Resolution Project has handled more than 400 divorce cases in the past 2 years, with more than 80% settled in one proceeding. Justice Fabe gave rural Alaska special attention. She spoke of courthouses opening in communities like Aniak and Hooper Bay, and efforts the Alaska Judicial Branch has made in coordinating with tribal courts in domestic and youth cases. But the speech wasn't all congratulatory. Fabe said the state still needs to ensure that justice isn't something delivered to villages by courts made of faraway strangers. She also said there is a problem when Alaska Native men and women occupy a third of the state's prison beds.
No matter how much we hear about the urban and rural divide, what happens in our rural areas concerns all of us and affects all of us. When lives in our rural communities are diminished by problems that have persisted for generations, we are all diminished.
Every year, the head of the Alaska Supreme Court is required to provide the legislature with an update on the judiciary system. This was Fabe's seventh address to the legislature. A vote on a controversial bill involving cruise ship waste has been put off until next week. The legislation would strike provisions of a citizens' initiative requiring cruise ships to meet clean water standards at the point of discharge by the 2016 season, instead of allowing them to release their waste into mixing zones. The bill was introduced by the governor's office, and it easily passed in the House last week. During a floor hearing today, Democrats made five attempts to amend the bill. Some received support from coastal Republicans, but all amendments ultimately failed. The most popular amendment would have kept the current cruise ship regulations in place, but it would have given vessels more time to meet stricter standards. Five Democrats were joined by Republicans Peter Michicki of Soldotna and Bert Stedman of Sitka in voting for the amendment. 10 Republicans voted against it. Senator Kathy Geisel, a Republican from Anchorage, argued against the amendment by citing a report from a state science panel that states incoming wastewater standards would be impossible for cruise ships to meet.
The science advisory panel, which most recently met, found that there is no more advanced technology available, nor is there any technology on the horizon coming down the track, Mr. President, to improve the wastewater discharge that is currently in place.
But Senator Hollis French, an Anchorage Democrat, took issue with that reasoning. The report issued by the cruise ship science panel has come into question after one of its members publicly disagreed with its findings. It came under additional scrutiny this weekend after the Anchorage Daily News found evidence that the panel's report was never supposed to be considered final.
The panel was misled, Mr. President, and that's really unfortunate that they were misled on two key points. One, they were told they would be able to finish their work. Two, they were told that the basis of the report would never be the basis for legislation.
The bill is scheduled to come back for a reading on the Senate floor on February 19th. Following the floor session, Majority Leader John Coghill said the reason for delaying the vote was to give three absent senators the chance to vote on the bill. Democrats Lyman Hoffman and Donnie Olson and Kodiak Republican Gary Stevens were all excused from today's floor session. The Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation has previously stated they would like to have cruise ship permitting rules finalized by February 15th. DEC did not respond to a request for comment on how the delayed vote would affect their timeline. Hundreds of people packed the Anchorage Assembly Chambers last night to protest a proposal by Mayor Dan Sullivan aimed at limiting unions. Despite the huge turnout to protest the measure, Assembly members voted to allow it to move ahead to public hearings. KSKA's Daisha Eden has the story.
There were so many people spilling from the Lusac Library Assembly Chambers into the lobby that Anchorage Fire Chief Chris Bushu had to ask people to stop coming in.
To my knowledge, this is the first time we've had to do this at the assembly meeting. And it is essentially what it is. It's unsafe, so we just can't allow it.
The lobby hit its capacity of 250 people even before the meeting began. And estimates put the total number of people at the meeting, including those who stood outside, between 750 and 1,000. People like Dan Rapaski with the IBEW Local 1547. He represents the workers at Municipal Light and Power and mechanics for the People Mover bus system. He says the mayor's proposal is way out of bounds.
If the mayor wants to talk to organized labor about changes he wants made in the laws, then he needs to come to us and talk to us. You don't negotiate with an axe hanging over your head, and we see it as that.
Lori Miner is the union president for the Classified Employees Association at the Mat-Su Borough School District and represents about 800 support staff there. She says she came all the way from the valley to support municipal workers because the stakes are high.
So Mayor Sullivan's proposal, even though it only affects the city of Anchorage and its municipality workers, it actually is going to affect the entire state and the collective bargaining rights that the entire state of Alaska has and all of its union employees.
Ordinance number 37 would impact approximately 2,200 municipal employees, from accountants to police officers and firefighters. It would cut benefits, lock pay to a five-year average of the consumer price index, and limit contract negotiations, including taking away the option of a strike. Inside the assembly chambers, Assemblymember Paul Honeman expressed concern that the ordinance was being rushed.
When was this discussed with department heads? And was it discussed, and when was it discussed with the organized labor groups?
Mr.
Honeman tried to postpone the ordinance indefinitely to kill it before it was even introduced. The motion failed. Assemblymember L.V. Gray Jackson moved to postpone the public hearing date until after municipal elections in April. That also failed. Honeman then proposed moving the public hearing date to the end of March. That failed too. Union leaders like Derek Shure with the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association say the workers he represents are disappointed that the mayor did not consult key leaders before crafting the proposal.
I hope people in Anchorage, if nothing else, ask for a fair process. That's all we want, is a fair process. We need to put some time into this. This collective bargaining ordinance has been around for 44 years. I don't understand what the hurry is to change it in 2 weeks.
Assembly Chair Ernie Hall, who sponsored the proposal along with Vice Chair Jennifer Johnston, said the goal is to have the ordinance overhauled by the end of March or the beginning of April, before upcoming union negotiations begin. Although he says he anticipates lengthy public testimony.
You saw the number of people here tonight. Public testimony is going to take a long time on this, a long time. And with the date that is a date certain, end of March, 1st to April, looking at the crowd of people here that weren't even in this room tonight, it could take a couple of meetings just to get through, maybe three, just to get through the public testimony.
Mayor Sullivan, who was attending meetings in Juneau, says the changes are needed to save money and simplify negotiations. Assembly members voted 7-4 to allow the proposal to go to public hearing February 26th. The Assembly is holding a work session on the proposal Friday at 1 p.m. at City Hall. It's open to the public. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the ACLU weighs in on a court case over subsistence fishing in the YK Delta.
It's important that the state and the courts recognize that fishing is a significant religious aspect to the way of life of these Alaska Native communities.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
There's increasing pressure on the U.S. House to pass a reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Congressman Don Young says it will happen, but probably not soon.
The Senate passed its reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act Tuesday afternoon, and President Barack Obama took note in his State of the Union address.
We know our economy is stronger when our wives, our mothers, our daughters can live their lives free from discrimination in the workplace and free from the fear of domestic violence. Today, the Senate passed the Violence Against Women's Act that Joe Biden originally wrote almost 20 years ago, and I now urge the House to do the same.
A nudge from the president is probably not what the Republican-controlled House needs to act, so Republicans in the Senate are putting on pressure too, like Lisa Murkowski.
It was a good reminder for us. It was important for the House to hear. It was important for the country to hear. And I hope the House is going to act.
GOP leaders did not bring the bill to the floor last Congress because of disagreements over increased protections for immigrants and gays and lesbians. It also expanded authority to tribal courts to prosecute non-natives in Indian country. Republican Tom Cole is the lone Native American in Congress. He supports the expanded jurisdiction and says he's making progress in trying to convince his caucus to sign on.
To be fair, this is an issue that a lot of members are not particularly familiar with. They're not around, you know, Indian reservations, don't have substantial tribal presence in their district. So I understand it takes time to sort of figure this out.
Congressman Don Young supports the measure, but he says he's not in leadership and has no control over the legislative calendar.
But it'll come up.
What's been the holdup?
Ask the Judiciary Committee.
Last Congress, the Judiciary Committee could not determine whether the tribal courts provision was constitutional. And if House leaders decide not to vote on the Senate version and have the Judiciary Committee draft a new plan, a final bill won't come for some time. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
A petition for the federal government to list several dozen species of Alaska cold water corals as endangered has stalled after an initial review. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports.
Biologist Kirsten Lippman submitted the petition on behalf of the Center for Biological Diversity. She says the corals need better protections because they're often the only structures on the ocean floor.
They're kind of like trees would be in a terrestrial environment in that they provide that shelter habitat and a place to rest and feed from for a whole host of species.
There are at least 130 coral species in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands, but scientists don't know much about their abundance and distribution. Lippman says of the 43 species listed in her petition, quite a few were identified only in the last few years.
So this is the kind of cutting edge research on the corals.
And Lippman thinks there are probably more out there to discover, so long as they don't disappear first. She says over the next century, the corals will be threatened by ocean warming and acidification, but she sees an even more immediate threat from fishing.
The problem with fisheries impacts is that they're occurring at a much faster rate, so these species could just be wiped out before they've even had a chance to be documented.
As it stands, fishermen remove between 50 and 100 tons of corals and sponges from the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands every year as bycatch. That's approximately the same mass as two or three humpback whales. Large parts of the region have been closed to bottom trawling since 2005, when the North Pacific Fishery Management Council adopted coral habitat protection measures. But Lippman says because pelagic or midwater trawl nets still make contact with the seafloor, those measures aren't good enough.
Another problem with the areas that the council protected is that many of the miles, the square nautical miles that they've protected, just don't have any corals. A whole lot of that is just mudflats. So those areas really don't mean anything.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration disagrees, which is part of the reason the agency declined to pursue Lippman's petition past an initial 90-day review. Spokesperson Julie Spiegel says there's simply no data to show fishing or ocean acidification are hurting Alaska's coldwater corals, and in fact, that NOAA's science actually contradicts the latter.
All the species mentioned in the petition have a type of external tissue that protects them from acidic water, so they may not be as susceptible to the effects of ocean acidification as some of the other organisms.
But Spiegel acknowledges that there are still a lot of other unknowns about Alaska's corals and says the agency is intensifying its research efforts.
Beginning last year, 2012, we did implement a three-year field research program in Alaska as part of NOAA's Deep Sea Coral Research and Technology Program. So we're hoping that will help to answer some questions with regards to corals in Alaska.
In the meantime, the Center for Biological Diversity will likely continue its pressure campaign. Lippman says she thinks NOAA's refusal to do a full 12-month review of the petition is illegal and that her organization is weighing its options moving forward. In Alaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
ExxonMobil and Russian national oil company Rosneft have signed an agreement to extract oil and gas from the Russian Arctic. According to information posted on Exxon's website, the deal covers 600 square kilometers in the Chukchi, Laptev, and Kara Seas. Significant to Alaska, the deal also provides Rosneft the option of acquiring a 25% interest in Exxon's Point Thompson natural gas and condensate project on the North Slope. Point Thompson is estimated to contain approximately 25% of known North Slope gas reserves. Under the deal, the companies will also jointly study the potential for an LNG project in the Russian Far East. The Exxon deal follows a similar arrangement between BP and Rosneft that fell through. Governor Sean Parnell says funding for a Fairbanks natural gas trucking project is must-pass legislation this session. Speaking to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce yesterday, Parnell said bills to fund the Interior Energy Project have to be dealt with before legislators go home this spring.
It is clear to most people in Juneau that Interior Energy is the number one issue.
Bills before the legislature would provide a $50 million state grant and hundreds of millions more in loans and bonding through the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority for development of a project to liquefy North Slope gas and truck it to Fairbanks. Governor Parnell urged area residents to voice broad support to legislators.
I want you to be able to describe not only how you think this will allow the economy of Fairbanks area to grow once energy costs are slashed, but also how this project will form the backbone and can leverage natural gas for smaller communities.
The governor said propane removed from gas at a North Slope processing facility could provide lower-cost energy to rural areas, including remote villages. ADA is reviewing proposals from 16 companies that have expressed interest in participating in a gas trucking project.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're interested in serving on your local Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council, the deadline to apply is Monday, February 18th. The councils provide information to the Federal Subsistence Board on subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing. For more information on the advisory councils and how to apply, call 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence at fws.gov. This message sponsored by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The FDA is considering approving genetically engineered, or GE, salmon to be sold in the U.S. Senator Mark Begich last week introduced two bills in the Senate that would ban these new salmon. And a group of Sitka residents held a demonstration against GMO salmon last weekend. KCAW's Ann Bryce reports.
About 100 people rallied in Sitka to protest what they see as the first step in introducing scientifically modified animals into the American diet. For Southeast Alaska, it's especially worrisome because the area depends largely on fishing for its livelihood. Lance Preston owns and operates a troller called the Sea Boy in Sitka. He's made a living as a fisherman since 1993 and says these new fish could bankrupt Alaska.
Commercial fishing is the number one employer in the entire state, and the vast majority of those jobs are salmon jobs. So it's really the economic engine of the state. It's a big deal. I mean, it's put the state out of business. You'll watch the population decline and suffer.
Nicknamed Frankenfish by critics, this new fish is an Atlantic salmon developed with genes from a Pacific salmon to make it grow faster, and a gene from an eel-like fish called an ocean pout that activates the growth hormone. While a natural Atlantic salmon reaches 28 to 30 inches long and 8 to 12 pounds, after about 2 years at sea, the new GE salmon will reach that in half the time. Protesters Saturday said they're worried the genetically engineered salmon could escape aquatic farms and crossbreed with wild fish. The company behind developing this new hybrid is called Aqua Bounty. It's a biotech company in Massachusetts that formed in 1991 and has spent nearly $70 million since it started. It claims that the fish are not a threat to wild stocks, and that the genetic modifications are no greater than changes that occur naturally in species. The FDA is now in a 60-day public comment period. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska is joining the Yupik fishermen trials. The group has filed a friend of the court brief in support of the fishermen's right to fish as part of their religious practice. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning Barnes reports.
The case includes 21 Yupik subsistence fishermen who were cited last summer for fishing illegally in the Kuskokwim River. The prosecution maintains that the fishermen were using king nets when the river was closed to nets that size. Subsistence fishing was being restricted to ensure more king salmon made it to the tributaries to spawn. However, the defense, the pro bono firm Northern Justice Project, is arguing that those restrictions go against the fishermen's First Amendment rights. Attorney James Davis Jr. says the case goes to the core of the Alaska Constitution. Alaska's ACLU agrees. Jeffrey Mittman is the group's executive director.
It's important that the state and the courts recognize that fishing is a significant religious aspect to the way of life of these Alaska Native communities.
Three fishermen were already found guilty in court in October. Back then, the defense argued that the fishermen didn't know what was and wasn't legal because the regulations were changing frequently. The three fishermen were fined $250 each. Since then, the defense has pursued First Amendment rights. On Monday, they filed a brief with the court that focuses on the fishermen's religious rights and their spiritual connection to the fish. The document states that if Yupik people do not fish for king salmon, the king salmon's spirit will be offended and it will not return to the river. It says that the king salmon play an even more unique role in the Yupik spiritual life than do other animals because it is the first fresh meat after a long winter. ACLU's Mittman says restricting fishermen from fishing for king salmon goes against their fundamental right to freedom of religion and freedom to practice their religious beliefs.
Unfortunately, currently in the state of Alaska, there is no mechanism for the state in making determinations of resource allocation to take in consideration these religious needs.
The defense's new brief suggests that the state should limit non-Yupik fishermen in the region before restricting Yupik fishermen. It says that the state has been limiting Yupik subsistence fishermen, but never sought to limit just the non-Yupik, particularly the thousands who were living in Bethel. It says that the non-Yupik are able to catch as many kings as they want without having spiritual or religious connections to the fish. Davis says if they prevail, the case could lead to major changes on the state level, looking at allocating resources by people and not geography.
We'll require the state to sit down with tribes like Yupik tribes and say, how can we try to accommodate your cultural, spiritual needs and at the same time protect a resource, whether it's moose or king salmon?
The new brief also mentions the state's lack of attention to the bycatch wasted in the pollock trawl fleet. It says for years, the pollock fleet has caught and wasted tens of thousands of king salmon, many of which are headed to the Kuskokwim River. It says instead of ending this practice, the state has supported the fleet's request for high bycatch limits. It says the state could sue or take action against the fishery or the federal government and demand protection of the rights of Yupik people. The trial of the 21 remaining fishermen is scheduled to happen on April 15th at the Bethel Courthouse. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
Officials with the federal agency that oversees the White Mountain National Recreation Area will hold the first of three meetings today in Fairbanks to explain a proposal that could lead to mining in the area. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Federal Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, has been working since 2008 on a draft resource management plan for lands it oversees in the eastern interior, but last month the agency announced that it's adding a proposal to the plan that would allow mineral leasing in the White Mountains National Recreation Area. That caused a stir among people who value the White Mountains as a place to hike, ski, snow machine, and hunt, among other things. Pam Miller with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center says the area is very popular because it's close to Fairbanks, but remote enough to enable people to get away from it all.
The White Mountains National Recreation Area is Fairbanks' backyard playground, remote but accessible. Great place to go.
The mining community sees it differently. Carl Golke, the executive director of the Fairbanks branch of the Alaska Miners Association, says its members are glad that the BLM added a fourth alternative to its resource management plan that could allow mining on 160,000 acres, or about 16% of the White Mountains National Recreation Area. Golke says exploration in the area conducted a few decades ago suggests there's not only gold in them thar hills, but also rare earth elements, a group of substances that are essential to the manufacture of electronic devices such as cell phones, flat-screen TVs, and more importantly, military hardware like missile guidance systems and night vision goggles.
We just can't shut it down to mining.
BLM officials aren't advocating mining in the White Mountains. In fact, their preferred alternative doesn't include provisions for mining. Agency officials say they'll decide which of the four alternatives will eventually be integrated into the plan after considering public comments that are expressed in today's public hearing, which begins at 7 p.m. at the Morris Thompson Cultural Center downtown, after an open house, which begins at 3. Other meetings are scheduled for next week in Anchorage and at least three others in Chalkitsik, Fort Yukon, and Eagle. The BLM will accept public comments on the plan through April 11th. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ann Bryce in Sitka, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, and Tim Ellis in Delta. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. You have the power to help others when you file online for your PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. You can make a real difference and support causes that matter most to you, from feeding the hungry, supporting youth in education, or sustaining the arts. Learn more at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and ConocoPhillips.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.